Ask Brett is, among other things, a travel diary that refuses to stay shallow. And this episode goes somewhere that earns that refusal.
Brett Hayhoe takes us to Japan, twice over, and the episode is really about what a place does to a person across time. The weight of family history, the shock of wealth, the comedy of winter streets, and the moral arithmetic of a very unusual host.
Let's start with the land itself.
The central question here is what it means to visit the same country twice and find it entirely different, not because the country changed, but because the person did.
The post opens with that tension directly and then earns it. The Japan of a teenage exchange student and the Japan of a young association president bear only the most superficial resemblance to one another, and the person who visited each of them was barely recognizable as the same individual either.
So the upshot is that the post is structured as two distinct countries, same geography, different visitor. And before either journey begins, there is history to reckon with. His mother's brother, Uncle Jim, survived Changi as a prisoner of war, was killed later by a drunk driver on the range between Cairns and Karanda, and that inheritance sat in the room when the Lion's exchange offer arrived.
She agreed anyway. Her love for her boy overrode whatever she was still carrying, which the Post calls simply the measure of who she was. That is not a small sentence.
The first placement lands him in Nara, with a host family of extraordinary wealth. The grandfather runs one of the largest plastics manufacturing plants in the world, keeps a chauffeur and a limousine, and on learning his 17-year-old Australian guest smokes, ensures there is a packet of cigarettes in the limo, in the room, and on his person at all times.
17. Freshly arrived from Cairns, stepping into a factory where 200 employees bow in unison. The recalibration required was, the Post notes, considerable. That is doing a lot of quiet work as an understatement.
The second placement in Kyoto trades extreme wealth for texture. The host father makes kimonos. The home sits along the Golden Walk near Kinkakuji. There is a winter street incident involving a passing car and what the Post describes as gray, slushy, magnificent mixture of melted snow, mud, and whatever else a road accumulates in winter.
And a tatami incident. Reclining instead of sitting cross-legged at dinner, a cultural insult of some significance, smoothed over by lions, all parties surviving intact.
The second visit, at 25, comes with an itinerary. Tokyo, Kyoto, Hiroshima, Osaka, bullet train throughout, 5-star, all expenses covered by a host whose identity is withheld until mid-trip. He turns out to be, by the Post's own accounting, one of the largest drug dealers and brothel owners in the country. One delegate objects. The response is direct. Has he asked you to take drugs? Has he asked you to become a prostitute? Then what is your problem? Shut up and enjoy the trip. The Post closes on the image of a small Japanese flag lapel pin, unpacked in Cairns, and a mother who looked at it made a joke about a flagpole in the front yard, and then laughed. The laugh of a woman who had been brave enough to let her boy go somewhere she had every reason to mistrust.
Japan gave him the travel bug. The travel bug, the Post notes, has not shown any signs of releasing its grip in the decades since. Given everything that came with the first two visits, that seems about right.
What the Post keeps returning to is the quality of Japanese generosity. Formal, unhurried, and absolute, across both visits and very different circumstances.
And the gap between the country you see at 17 and the one you find when you return. The next chapter, apparently, is Japan Part 2, which suggests the travel bug has more to say.